Okay, this is continuing on in our series of 100 reasons to become a vegetarian. We had a bit of an interruption where we showed a movie for Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disappearance day. But the first segment, and I think we covered 38 slides, and altogether there are 158 slides altogether. So the first consideration, which we'll just mention, was comparative anatomy. When you compare the body of the human being to those of herbivores who only plants and grains, and carnivores to those who only eat meat, the overwhelming similarities fall in the area of our human bodies being exactly the same in almost every respect to herbivores. And there are hardly no similarities between us and carnivores. Then the second area that we covered, that took 13 slides. The second area we covered had to do with health and nutrition, the nutritional values of a vegetarian diet. And we discussed the protein myth that if you're a vegetarian, you don't get enough protein. The average American gets 6 times more protein. The average meat-eating American gets 6 times more protein than they need every day. And the average vegetarian gets 3 times more protein. So nobody's suffering from a protein deficiency in America. Everybody, even most vegetarians, have an excess of protein. It was pointed out that the most powerful animals in nature, they don't eat meat, and yet they get protein. You don't have to eat meat to get protein. Vegetables, fruits, seeds, nuts, and grains are excellent sources of protein. We covered the fact that the number one killer in America is heart disease, responsible for 50% of all deaths in Britain, most of which can be prevented by a vegetarian diet. Excess protein also cannot be stored in the body, and that's why you have osteoporosis in epidemic proportions in meat-eating countries, and almost no osteoporosis in countries where they don't eat meat. The second thing that's linked to meat-eating besides heart disease is cancer. That's the number two killer in America. And meat contains 14 times more chemicals and pesticides than plant foods. We just kept skipping through here. All right. Now, those are the areas that we covered up to this point. Now, the next issue, and I'm not sure how many reasons we've actually given at this point of the 100 reasons. I'm not sure exactly how many we've covered. But it's said that many, many people die annually as a result of malnutrition. Here are some pictures of children that are not getting sufficient calories every day. And the UN Secretary General recently, I don't know what recently is, admitted that meat consumption in rich countries is key cause for hunger around the world. So it's like examples given that everybody can't drive a Cadillac because a Cadillac is a gas guzzler. We're finding out. I saw one of these little smart cars. They're even making the smart cars smaller. Can you imagine that? I swear there was a smart car in Spanish Fork. It was only this big from front to back, you know. It's like a compact smart car. Because we just can't afford, everybody can't drive a Cadillac. So similarly, it just doesn't work if everyone drives a Cadillac. It won't work. It's not sustainable. So similarly, meat is like the Cadillac of the food choices. So much water, so much grains go into the production of meat. It's like everybody can't drive a Cadillac. Everyone can't eat meat. It's just not possible. I was talking with Mikey and Dina today as we were driving into town, and they were asking about the beef farm being right next door to us. They said, every farm here is beef. Nobody grows grains for food for human beings. If they have land, they grow hay, they feed it to the beef, and they slaughter the beef. 90% of all the grains that are grown in America are fed to beef, and then we get it back through the beef. I'm sure those proportions are going to come up right here now in the next slide, if I can get it. I have to change the batteries here. So here you have the chart. 16 kilograms of grain go to produce 1 kilogram of beef. In other words, 16 times more land are needed, or the land that could have produced 16 kilograms of grain go to produce 1 kilogram of beef. And there you go. That 1 kilogram of beef would feed 2 people. The same land, if it was dedicated to food grains and legumes and vegetables, would feed 20 people. I saw a film one time, Diet for New America, and the physician asked the question. He said, if you are on a desert island, If you were on a desert island, would you rather have one hamburger or 16 loaves of bread? If that was all you had. Well, anybody would say 16 loaves of bread. But the one hamburger, in terms of resources and land allotted, actually the one hamburger takes as much resources as 16 loaves of bread. So if you didn't eat the hamburger, it would release 16 times more food to deal with world hunger. 80% of the corn and 95% of the oats grown in the United States is eaten by livestock. The percentage of protein wasted by cycling grain through livestock is calculated by experts as 90%. Producing 1 pound of beef requires 16 pounds of edible grain and soybeans, which could be used to feed the hungry. And the funny thing is that the protein that you get from animal sources, and I think we talked about this last week, is secondhand protein. It's not actually very good quality protein, because protein is synthesized on the plant level. It's not synthesized in the body of a human being or an animal. So the protein that we get from the plant sources is first class protein. It's original protein. Now, when the animal eats the protein and then you get protein from the meat of the animal, it's like secondhand protein. It doesn't have the same energy and it's not usable by the tissues to the same degree. There's another factor, which is not just how much protein is in what you eat, but it's what percentage of that protein that your tissues are going to absorb and use. You might get meat which might have, I'm just saying here, maybe 22% protein. And you might get a soy product or a legume which has 18% protein. But it doesn't end there. That meat, maybe of that 22%, your tissues only use like 30% of that 22%. But the 18% legume, your tissues can use 60% of that. So the ultimate result is that from plant sources, you get a higher quality protein and you ultimately get more absorption and more use from it as well. 1 acre of land can produce 40,000 pounds of potatoes or 250 pounds of beef. 56% of all U.S. farmland is devoted to beef production. 100 million people could be adequately fed using the land freed if Americans reduced their intake of meat by a mere 10%. In a book by Jeremy Ritkin that I read a few years ago called Beyond Beef, it said that if Americans would reduce their beef consumption, just beef, not chicken or lamb, if they would reduce their beef consumption by 50%, we wouldn't have to import oil from the Middle East. Because it is oil and petrochemical-based fertilizers that replace the topsoil after running livestock on it. It is the petrochemical-based products that produce the gas to run the freons and the freezers and the trucks that crisscross the country with the livestock and the meat. So if we reduced our beef consumption alone by 50%, we wouldn't have to import oil from the Middle East. I go to Los Angeles. We lived in Los Angeles for 10 years. And Southern California is considered a perennial chronic drought area. When you go to the health club, they have little stickers on the window. Please don't let the water run while you're shaving. And I have to chuckle. You know, they tell you not to let the water run while you're shaving. Now, Southern California, everybody has a big lawn. Everybody has a big lawn, which required to be watered. Most people have two or three cars, which require to be washed. And then you wash your dishes, you shower, you do all that. Southern California has the highest percentage of golf courses of anywhere in the world, which of course you have to lavish a lot of water. And then there's all those people drinking water. And yet in spite of all these uses of water for human consumption, still 56% of all the water in Southern California is given to livestock. So you have to laugh, you know. Don't let the water run while you're shaving, but at the same time, eat beef, you know. Eat beef, which uses more water in a more wasteful way than anything else. The average American consumes in a 72-year lifetime approximately 11 cattle, 3 lambs and sheep, 23 hogs, 45 turkeys, 1,100 chickens, and 862 pounds of fish. This is the benefit of technology. Around the turn of the century, when most of your meat-based products would come right off the farm, you'd actually be eating the cow that grew up with you and played with your kids, or the chickens that have been in the yard. And there was, you know, it was, people would do it, but there was obviously cause for hesitation, killing almost members of the family. But when they developed the packing plants in Chicago, Henry Ford revolutionized the auto industry because he established the assembly line. So the difference between the assembly line and the way they did it previously was one or two men would put an entire car together and do a number of different tasks. And it would take some time and it would require a great deal of skill. Henry Ford's genius was make an assembly line and have the same guy do the same thing all day long. So you didn't have to, you could put any unskilled worker in there. You didn't have to train him. You didn't have to pay him very much. They didn't have to know very much. And they just had to do this one thing all day long. That was called the assembly line. Now from that, he got the idea of the assembly line from the disassembly lines in Chicago in the packing plants. You know, the cowboys would have the trail drive in Texas, and they'd go up through, and they'd get to the railhead in Kansas, they'd put the cows on the train, they'd go to Chicago. And what revolutionized meat eating, so-called, was that instead of one person, you know, rendering the carcass and cutting it and knowing all the different cuts and way of storage, they'd just hang the cow up by 1 or 2 feet, and everyone would make a, and then run it down the conveyor belt, and everyone would just make 1 or 2 cuts. Same principle, unskilled labor, don't have to pay them very much, don't have to train them very much, and in this way the production goes up exponentially. So the only reason that the average American can eat these so many animals is because of technology. Otherwise, I don't know how many animals this is, 11 and 3 is 14, 23, 33, 39, 90, 20, 1,200, about 2,000 animals, 2,000 animals. You know, if you go back to the turn of the century, the average American might have eaten 300 animals in their lifetime. But technology has enabled them to eat so much more. And of course, if you believe in karma, the law of action and reaction, this compounds our future liabilities to an incredible degree. So while Americans are stuffing themselves with the Cadillac of foods, and everyone else is waiting in line in China and Mexico and India, a sign of affluence, a sign of opulence is when you can eat meat. Most countries that are agriculturally based and are relatively poor, they don't eat meat at all. You know, you even look at the Mexican burrito and tacos and all these things didn't originally have meat in them. They were vegetarian preparations. Maybe once in a while for a special occasion you'd have meat. But once you become more and more affluent, it appears on the table more and more often. And then if you're really affluent, a sign of real affluence is you can have it at every single meal. And this is the downside. In the Sri Yashu Upanishad, it says, Isavasyam idam samyam yachin cha jagacham yatina tatena bunjitaha magridaha kashisidharam. The Supreme Lord has provided enough for everybody, provided each person takes their quota and leaves aside the rest, knowing well to whom it belongs. So there's enough of foodstuff, there's enough of nutrition to feed not only the present population, but even 10 times the present population, provided we know what our quota is, what has been set aside for us, and leave aside the rest, knowing well to whom it belongs. So as soon as you start eating meat, you transgress your quota by a factor of many, 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 many times over. Lord has provided enough, but he hasn't provided enough that everyone can eat meat at every meal and not have this be the downside. You have Americans dropping dead of cancer and heart attacks at the age of 30 because of overconsumption, and then you have children in other parts of the world that don't even have the bare minimum. If everyone adopted a vegetarian diet, according to the Population Reference Bureau, current food production would theoretically feed 10 billion people. That's 2.5 times more people than are on the planet right now, more than the projected population for the year 2050. So that was what went before, the World Hunger Solution. Now we'll go into another area of interest, which is called cruelty. Your choice, your choice, your choice. Your choice to eat oatmeal, or your choice to eat Kentucky Fried Chicken. Your choice to eat fruits and grains and vegetables, or your choice to eat chicken. Your choice to eat this, or your choice to eat this. But they don't have a choice. They're raised in you know, in areas that they're just packed tight in cages, one on top of another. The ones underneath get the stool passed on them from the ones above. Their feet and all are deformed because they're never walking on a flat surface. This just seems to be going forward by its own choice. Anyway, would you just flick through the... This is... It's. I think it was Paul McCartney said that if slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be a vegetarian. You know, when I was a kid, they actually used to take kids sometimes on tours of slaughterhouses, and then they stopped that because it was just too appallingly cruel and too gross. We don't like to put even these pictures up, but the fact is that this is reality. This is what is behind the meat that you put on your table. And someone may say, well, I can't be responsible. Someone else killed the animal. I'm just eating it. But according to the Vedic culture, there's a gang of six, and all six of these people are considered co-conspirators in the death of that animal, and they all share in the karmic reaction. The person that grows the animal, the person that transports the animal, the person that kills the animal, the person that cooks the animal, and the person that eats the animal. So even though you didn't kill the animal, you're supporting a whole industry. You're paying the salaries of the truckers, you're paying the salaries of the farmers, you're paying the salaries of the butchers, and you're paying the salaries of the cooks. If you go to court and you're accused of conspiring to murder someone, and you defend yourself by saying, I didn't actually shoot them, I didn't actually stab them, but I paid someone to do it, then you're just as guilty as the person who actually did the act. So these are the six co-conspirators, and all of them share in the karma for the slaughter of the animal. Now, an argument that's sometimes given is, the animal must have been a meat eater in his past life, and now he's taken birth as an animal, and that's his karma, you see. If you're a meat eater in one life, then you take your next birth in such a way as to be on the other end of the fork, and that's their karma. So I can go ahead and eat that animal, and it was his karma anyway. And that's true. That's true. If you're born a beef cow in America, there's no way you're going to, you know, roam the range and, you know. you're identified by that. And in fact, the beef cow is not good for anything other than beef. They don't even produce that much milk. They're genetically engineered by human society in order to produce meat. So it's true to say that a beef cow could have taken that birth because they've been a beef eater in their last life, and it's inevitable that they be slaughtered. And so what's the harm in killing them? Because if I don't do it, that's their fate anyway. And that's true of the animal, but the question you need to ask yourself is, do you then want to become implicated? Do you then want to become implicated in that cycle of action and reaction? Because if that animal took birth in that way because of having eaten meat in his last life, then put two and two together and think of what one's fate might be in the next life if one eats the meat. So these are all very unpalatable facts, and we'll just flip through them. We don't like to think of the cruelty, but at the same time, it's not helpful to live in the dark and stick your head in the sand. Hens are so tightly packed in the battery of cages that they cannot move an inch during their encagement. The USDA recommends giving each hen 4 inches of what they call feeder space. In this little space, the birds cannot stretch their wings and legs, cannot fulfill normal behavior patterns. Constantly rubbing against the wire cages, they suffer from severe feather loss, and their bodies are covered with bruises and abrasions. Hens are forced to lay up to 200 to 220 eggs every year, leading to weakened bones, feather loss, etc., etc., etc. This is the reality. Male chicks are of no commercial value for the slaughterhouse. They are either packed in garbage bags to suffocate to death or thrown away in trash cans. For every egg-laying hen confined in a battery cage, there was a male chick that was killed at the hatchery. Male chicks of egg-laying breeds of no economic... Okay, I already mentioned that. All right. The recent trend is to grind the male chicks alive and use it as a high fertility manure for the farms. In the U.S. alone, 660,000 animals are killed for meat every single hour. The average per capita consumption of meat in the U.S. and Australian cattle is 200 pounds per year. Manure fumes and rotting carcasses force workers in the slaughterhouses to wear gas masks. A newborn calf is likely to be taken to a veal factory. There he will be locked up in a stall and chained by his neck to prevent him from turning around for his entire life. He will be injected with antibiotics and hormones to make him grow. One of the most highest priced types of meat and most sought after is veal. And veal is the flesh of a newborn cow. Now the veal meat is especially delicate, but the producers make it even more so by restricting the baby cow, not letting it get its mother's milk, not letting it get any exercise, because with exercise comes muscle tone, and then it becomes more stringy and tough to eat. So they don't get any exercise, and they're intentionally fed an anemic diet. So they don't have any exercise, they don't have any muscle tone, and that's the gourmet food of choice. Number of meat and egg producing animals slaughtered each year in the world is over 24 billion. William Ralph. I wonder if that's Ralph Waldo Emerson. It looks like his picture, right? This is Ralph Waldo Emerson says, "We have enslaved the rest of animal creation and have treated them so badly that if they were to formulate a religion, they would depict the devil in human form. Truly, man is the king of beasts, for his brutality exceeds theirs. We live by the death of others. We are burial places." Leonardo da Vinci. Pythagoras, "Those that kill animals to eat their flesh tend to massacre their own." You know, an argument is, why do you waste so much energy on bleeding heart for the animals? We have so much suffering, we have so much violence in human society. But there's a connection. There's a connection between the violence that we perpetrate on the animals and the violence that we perpetrate on each other. It spills over. And most of these horrible mass murderers like Dahmer and all, they got their start by torturing animals. And here are the celebrities that wear the animals. And that's your PETA person. With the rest of the animal, the fur of which they didn't put on their back. Nothing will benefit human health and increase the chances for survival of life on Earth as much as evolution to a vegetarian diet. And that's by Albert Einstein. Stop cruelty, be a vegetarian. So we've got about maybe 4 minutes until the yoga class starts. So what we'll do is we'll just go through this list of famous vegetarians. Who was a vegetarian that we know of? Plato, vegetarian. Socrates, vegetarian. Pythagoras, Leonardo da Vinci, St. Francis of Assisi, Vincent van Gogh, Albert Einstein, Isaac Newton, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Edison, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Anderson. What is his first name? I don't know who. Hans Christian Andersen, is that it? I don't know. George Bernard Shaw, Franz Kafka, Mahatma Gandhi, Menaka Gandhi, Abdul Kalam, that's a former Prime Minister of India. Steve Jobs went to, when he dropped out of Reed College in Oregon, he used to feed himself by turning in cans for their deposit. And he said his one good meal a week, he would walk 7 miles across town to the Hare Krishna temple on Sunday afternoon and get a feast. I've never heard of him reciprocating for our kindness by throwing, you know, a few dollars our way, but in any way, we're glad to have helped wherever we could, Steve. And then Henry Ford, vegetarian, George Harrison, John Lennon, Bob Dylan, Paul McCartney, Carlos Santana, Bob Marley, Michael Jackson, Jackie Chan, Dustin Hoffman. Of course, some of these movie stars, you know, they may have fallen off the wagon. Hema Malini, Amitabh Bachchan, Madhuri Dixit, Julie Chawla, Bill Pearl, Mr. Universe, Andreas Chali, Mr. International, It's interesting because bodybuilders figured out, you know, they're very scientific about their eating habits. And the bodybuilders figured out some time ago that when you eat too much protein, when you build your body, you actually tear, you create tears in your tissues. And then it's protein which causes the tissues to repair themselves. And anything that repairs itself becomes stronger than it was originally. If you break your arm, the point where the bone knits and heals is stronger than the rest of the arm. So bodybuilding is breaking down and then building up. And so you need an adequate amount of protein to rebuild the tissues. But they found that when you get more than you need protein, it actually is counterproductive because it leaches calcium and all from your body. And it also takes more calories to excrete and get rid of the excess protein than otherwise. So bodybuilders figure that where the average person needs about 7% of their diet is protein, the average bodybuilder about 9%. I mean, if you're really into it, training like these guys, it'd be to 9%. Now, a potato has 7% protein. So the humble potato has 7% protein. It also has fiber, it has carbohydrates, it has vitamin C. It's interesting because when the British wanted to take the rich lowlands of the Irish in order to raise beef, they pushed the Irish off of their lands and pushed them up on hillsides where the only thing they could grow were potatoes. And whereas the Englishmen feeding their beef that was raised on the grasses of the lowlands got all kinds of diseases like gout and heart disease and cancer, the Irish became the healthiest people in the world. And they're just eating potatoes, which has exactly the right combination of nutrients. They would have scrambled potatoes for breakfast and potato soup for lunch and potato cutlets for dinner, and they became the healthiest people in the world. Continuing on, Larry Bird, all-time great basketball player, vegetarian. Australian cricketer, Greg Chappell, vegetarian. Carl Lewis, I know he's a vegetarian, is also the other fellow. Edwin Moses, vegetarian. Rahul Dravid, Anil Kumble, I assume these are cricketers from India. Martina Navratilova, I've never figured out how to pronounce her name. Navratilova, vegetarian. Now, this is the former Ronald McDonald. I met this guy in Toronto. He was the Ronald McDonald for many, many years. Jeff Giuliano. And he quit his job. This is a number of years ago. And he became a vegetarian. And after having done that, he said, I brainwashed youngsters into doing wrong. I want to say sorry to children everywhere for selling out to concerns who make millions by murdering animals. So there's about 58 more slides, and we'll reserve that for part three of this series of Tuesday night talks on vegetarianism. Now it's time for yoga.